Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock.
It's another week, another amazing guest, and another opportunity for me to bring you value through someone else's story. This week's episode will be coming to you from Creative South. I was asked by Mike Jones to come out and record live at the conference, and I had a blast. Creative South is one of my favorite conferences to go to. It's a magical place. It's all about community, and it's all about building each other up. No matter what level you are, you will get value, and you will find people that are much more excited about pushing you up than pushing you down. So, without further ado, this week's episode.
We are live at Creative South 2019, Passion Behind the Art. I'm here with my good friend, creative businessman, Brian White.
Hey.
Brian, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right, so let's jump right into it. How did your creative journey start?
I got interested in design. My father ran a company that was a display company that did point of purchase displays. So they actually had a design team and a design lab, basically about 12 computers. It was back in the day. I don't know if I want to throw out dates or not, but so I was able to dabble with Photoshop like 10th grade, late at night, after playing Doom and stuff like that. But it's like I'd jump on Photoshop and just taught myself it.
Really?
Know, and was messed around with freehand, which is back then. And yeah, I'll have little references that some people won't know, but that's okay.
I love it. So you dabbled with Photoshop, freehand. You did a lot of analog stuff. So what did you do when it was time for school? When it was time to decide, okay, what am I going to do in school?
I was really into art, and so I worked really hard on my portfolio my senior year and got a half ride in MIAD. But it was all for painting and for more of like probably drawing, pencil, you know, charcoal. And then I was going to minor in design, but I just didn't, it just didn't pan out there. I didn't like living there, and this living situation was really bad. So
oh.
I liked the school, but I just couldn't live there. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what did you do?
I went to Biola out in L.A. for a year, and I learned, I did kind of a minor in photography. So back then it was black and white photography, doing some pretty crazy prints. I would print out, you know, 40 or 50 prints, cut them up, and then sew them onto clothes, and do
really
just really unique like live art kind of stuff. So
wow.
But at the same time, all throughout, there's always been this like minor in design. So it's like I was learning Illustrator and more foundational work of
right.
Like design one, design two, design three, you know, like we're going to put all these wood blocks together and how would you balance it? Where's your eye movement? All that stuff.
Got it.
Learning the rule of thirds. And
you are a great designer.
Thank you.
But dude, you are an amazing artist.
Oh, appreciate that.
Like, so how in the world do you balance that? Like, how? Because I feel like your real, real, real passion is art.
I love art, yeah. And I think it was neat. My parents, you know, I actually had my first figure drawing class in ninth grade. So you think about, you know, junior higher or whatever back then, is like right before high school, drawing nude women and men, you know, and it was like my family was very conservative, and it was like they were fine with it because of like, I mean, it's just very different
right.
from other stuff, you know. So, you know, they'd have friends that come and visit their house, and I'd have these, like, 18-inch by 24-inch live nude guy with, like they would be hanging on ropes and stuff at, like, KU classes. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it's just, like, it was really good for me to have that foundational support of, like, this is what muscle structure looks like. This is what a drawing with bones looks like versus, like, floating.
Right.
But as I've grown in my art, I know that it's not my favorite to do, like, full realism. Mm-hmm. And it's more, like, the interpretive part of it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I think you have to start there to right. have that foundation to right. be able to move away from it. Like, Picasso had his blue series, and then he moved into the other series of the
right.
woman going down the staircase,
mm-hmm.
and people were angry at him, but it's like, he knew how to draw a woman going down the staircase, but he wanted to show it in three different motions.
Got it. You know, I can't remember his name, but this real popular animator for Disney and stuff like that. He said one of the turning points and one of the greatest advice he got was from a Disney recruiter was that stop practicing to draw cartoons, animations. Stop doing that.
Yeah.
Draw real life.
Yeah, go and draw lions. And
draw real things. No more animation. Draw real things. Draw real people, real animals, real all of that. And he was like, it was just so mind-blowing to him because, you know, you would think, oh, okay, just keep practicing your cartooning and stuff
yeah.
like that. And this was a Disney recruiter that told him that. Draw real things.
Yeah.
That's what's going to set you apart.
Yeah.
So it was real cool to kind of hear what you said about that. So, all right. So you went to school, you know what I mean? You did your thing, and you jumped out, graduated, and
I actually never finished school.
What?
I'm serious.
What?
It's actually I'm like a late junior, early senior fine art painting major.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started Cheeseball, my first like forehead screen printer in my garage, literally. I mean, it's like seems like that's what everyone did. But I started making some money. And I had a pager, yes, again. I'm throwing some out.
Pager.
I would get paged in class. And I'm like, I got like a $500, you know, job coming in. I've got to get out of this class. So I just fizzled. But I really feel like it was neat. My father helped me, and my mom, they helped me support me by giving me some money, some seed money to get started, and basically learning how to do organization, learning web design for the first time,
mm-hmm.
to brand the products,
mm-hmm.
and put the brand up online,
mm-hmm.
and doing all that system was my schooling.
Mm.
So it was like I was self-taught, but there literally wasn't web design in
right, it didn't exist.
It didn't exist.
Right.
So it was like, when we had a rollover on a button, I just like jumped up and down. I seriously did. I was like, it changed color. I know, it's like, but I mean, it's like,
yeah,
it's
true.
Around, you know?
Because there was a point where when you went over a button, nothing really happened.
No, it was just a slice that you clicked, yeah. So.
Oh, that is so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you bring up pagers, it's like, you're bringing back, like, nostalgia right now. It's just, like, the whole idea of everybody needing a pager, wanting a pager.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get yourself a pager.
I really wish I had finished, and I'm always, like, pushing my kids and other people to finish, you know, because a lot of people that end up where I was don't end up where I am now.
Mm.
And I think it always bubbles up when you're at, like, I just spoke at UCDA this last fall, University of College Designers Association. It's for all these designers who are working in colleges. They've already graduated, maybe got their master's, you know, and so it's an easy point for me to have it bubble up and be insecure a little
right,
bit.
Right.
Especially when you're around doctorates.
Right.
Who have been in school for 8 years.
Right.
But I feel like I've gotten good schooling from my past, but I'm always learning.
Right.
And that's one thing that's kept me in the game, I guess.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I think that for people that, okay, they hear this narrative, okay, I didn't finish school or I didn't go to college, and they forget this one ingredient that all those people have to get to somewhere where they probably shouldn't be, mm-hmm. or they weren't, quote-unquote, qualified to be as per paper, is a drive.
Yes, you have to have that.
Yeah, because, like, there's no one looking over your shoulder. There's no one grading your paper.
Yeah.
It's literally
you
nothing.
You do it or you don't.
And I feel like that's, like, you hear the story of Steve Jobs, oh, he didn't go to college, and you hear Zuckerberg, but they had this drive. You had this drive.
Yeah, I remember the first year we were doing our taxes, and I had literally a shoebox full of receipts. That's the artist in me, you know? And I think I made, like, $9,000. So I didn't owe any taxes, but it was like, how do you live off of $9,000, you know?
Wow.
And it's like ramen and, like, trading things out, and I had an old car that, it was awful. But at the same time, it's like, we always lived within our means instead
right.
of trying to buy a car that we couldn't afford. So
right.
That's what's been really helpful.
That's a whole nother lesson in itself.
Yeah.
Us living within our means.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of the reasons why people have a lot of issues.
Well, when you're not living in your means, it puts more stress on
you.
Yeah,
more pressure.
And that stress and the pressure pushes into your time, mm-hmm. and you can't spend the time and effort that you want on your dreams.
Right, exactly, because
yeah.
you literally cannot. You can't afford to.
Yeah.
Right, because that's a more long-term play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, you didn't finish school. You started making a little money on your own, doing your thing. Like, how did you turn it into something where it could sustain you and your family?
It was hard. I think I got a couple of really hard lessons where I had a skate team, about, I think it was 5 guys, pretty young guys, and so I flew them all to Atlantic City. We did a skate competition, so it was a sponsored event for
mm-hmm.
the company, selling t-shirts,
mm.
but you sell 800 t-shirts and you've got a little bit of money,
yeah,
you know? But it's
rough.
Like, you sell branding and you can do that within one job, you know? And so I started to see, you know, I think my brother hired me to do his Dreamweaver. What? Oh, yeah. He hired me to do his web design. No CSS, no nothing. I think he wanted like 800 pages, and I was like, no, you don't need that many. You know, he was making a page per product.
Eight?
It was crazy. But it was $12 an hour. And I was like,
Let's do it.
Let's
do it. Let's do it.
I know. And so I was like, this is amazing. I'm making money. You know, and it's like, we were in Play It Again Sports and like other places, like distributing clothes, but it's like, the amount of time and effort you really have to put in to...
For a physical product?
To sell a physical product
is
tough.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's I always tell people, like, if you want to do physical products, you must be prepared for a long term.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
it's not one of those things where you can, in a couple of years, you'll be thriving.
And you can't guarantee that you're going to sell it all either.
Exactly.
We had manufactured jeans, actually. So we took like 5 or 6 pairs of jeans that we really liked and created a hybrid version of it.
Ooh.
So I learned how to sew, do all this stuff.
Dude.
And my brother and I did this. We called them the BMW luxury jean. That's my initials. Probably get sued nowadays, but...
The BMW luxury jeans.
We made 800 pairs out of Texas. And like, I remember driving in a truck, and it started to rain, and we didn't have a cover, and they were getting wet, so like half of them got mildew on them.
Oh my goodness.
You just think about, there's a lot of variables with physical product
right.
that you have to think about.
Right. That is so true. That's stuck in my head now, the BMW jeans. That is cool. So, I mean, you started, so you saw the benefit of just doing something digitally created versus, okay, I'm going to make a physical product to provide for my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's...
When I saw some action on the website and really wanted to basically rebrand my company every 6 months, I enjoyed it so much.
Yes.
And, like, doing Corel Draw and thinking about, hey, are these colors the ones we want to use?
Uh-huh.
Like, no, let's choose these colors, you know? And it's like, I can do whatever. And so it's like really rebranding my own company helped me understand
that
the branding
true.
Process.
Like, we've all done that. We've changed our color scheme.
Yeah.
Especially back in the days, especially when web design was really taking off. You did your website probably, like, if not every month, almost. Like, you did it over. It was like one of those never-ending projects.
Yeah.
You just kept on tweaking and tweaking and tweaking and tweaking and tweaking. So, all right, so you've built your this way of, you got start out with this project from your brother, this $12 an hour website design of over 800 pages.
Yeah.
And, it's funny you say that. It's so crazy. Now, we don't have to do that, but that was like a realistic thing we had to do. Like, each page had to be individually created.
Yeah, and if a color needed to change, you needed to use BB Edit and then do a find and replace and then
right.
select it. Yeah, it was crazy. So, yeah, when CSS hit 2006 and it just blew my mind, it almost made me quit. I was like, I can't start over.
Oh my goodness.
I'm slicing here.
Yeah. But at that time, there was still a lot of people slicing.
Yes.
Like, a lot of people were slicing, going into Photoshop and strictly just slicing up a whole picture and creating links and created, oh my goodness.
Yeah, but before that, like, I taught myself, forget what it's called. It's a Macromedia Director, I think, and it had its own language.
It was
pretty tough, but, and doing some Flash technology.
Right.
And so I had learned that for my business, and so then I was able to do it for Hills, pet food nutrition, through, like, a freelance project, and that built into, like, doing a full DVD animation and, like, really doing a lot of, like, Flash sites where you would have, like, layers that you could import in and do, like, animation into it. And
right.
Everything was non-responsive, so you could just do
whatever you wanted.
Which made my artistic ability, I felt like, that kind of killed it with responsive design, and so it's always like kind of a fight for like what's right or what's wrong, but you just have to do what you do.
Right. So what is it like now for you balancing the passion for just being an artist and design?
I get some art in my paid career. Doing illustration for disc golf design and some illustration work, but I don't promote it enough, I think. It pays way less than UI design.
Right.
And so that's kind of like how, like, branding and UI design is how I support my family and my business and the foundation of the business so that I can do other things, but...
So what is your magic bullet to be generating all this millions in your design career?
What? Coming in?
I said, what is the magic bullet to generate all this millions with your design freelance?
Residual income.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about that residual income.
As the years have gone on, I've done some work for, like, Creative Market or Retro Supply Co. And even, like, have some other side projects on the Gumroad and stuff like that. But it's just, even the disc golf designs, like, I'll get royalties from them. And everything that you do stacks up. And as long as you're organized and you have a bookkeeper, if you're an artist, you need a bookkeeper.
Right.
So that, you know, it just kind of flows into the business. So we do like a lot of WordPress sites, and we just offer, hey, we can watch your security and do updates for you.
Oh.
And we sell that to a lot of smaller companies, and it doesn't take that long, but we support them, and so we have people that do that and just update it, and that's like a good base for building businesses. So it's like anything that can be like, you're not selling something that they don't need. They
right,
really do
right,
need it,
right.
And they don't have time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take us as much time as it would them. So it's a kind of a win-win on both sides. So
nice. That's
some
cool.
of that stuff just builds that foundation, so that if you have 3 or 4 months of salary for the full company, to be able to use. So when I use freelancers, and we have 15 contractors.
Nice.
So we sometimes pay them even before net 15. Maybe I shouldn't say this on that. But like a lot of times we'll do the projects and they're half up front, half for delivery.
Right.
And not net 30.
Right.
It's like, that's stupid. You know, it's like, we've already done the work. You can write a check. It doesn't take that long.
Right, right.
Maybe with Sprint it takes like 8 days for it to right, go right,
through
right, the
right, 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 right. That's interesting, because that's a lot of the business logistics of some of the stuff.
Yeah, cash flow is really important.
Right, 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 right. Because at the end of the day, you got to stay in business to even keep hiring and keep doing what you're doing. You got to figure out how to generate good cash flow. So what are some of the top 3 ways you kind of generate good cash flow?
You know, it fluctuates, but what you try and do is make sure that the fluctuation doesn't drain you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of hard with political and, you know, I don't know, just the stuff going on lately as far as, you know, divisions between people and stuff. It's like, last January was the first time we had been slow in like 6 years, but it was slow for a while. And so it hurt a little bit. And thankfully, a lot of people were praying. We got a lot more work, and we ended up being better than what we were the year before.
Nice.
But you just have to kind of be ready for those. And I don't think I was mentally ready for it, you know, because I'd just been coasting for like 6 years on like big project comes in,
right.
We do that, we do like 5 other small projects while the big project's going on,
mm-hmm.
and everything comes to a head, and you get a bunch of money, and then you separate it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. So you have design projects. You have some residuals from royalties and stuff like that. Is there any other way you kind of generate income from your design business, or just your skills or whatever in general?
Actually, I got hired to do some sign painting.
Nice.
Last year, and what was fun is I brought my middle daughter Lena to go help me, and then Ellie helped me too, my oldest, for a little bit this last time. But I designed it in Illustrator, and then just looked at it, and then painted acrylic on a glass panel. But they knew I had done. They had seen some of my Instagram work on painting and stuff, so it was fun. So it was kind of like a hybrid of like analog and digital.
Right, right, right.
You're looking
right.
at a vector image that you created, but then you're just painting it. So I like.
So
that.
Do you like frame it out in scale first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've done a lot of interesting projects in the past where I designed like all the print work for Dairy Farmers of America. And
okay.
In 2006, I redid their annual meeting, and like the print budget was like $200,000. So
wow.
It was like I had to bring in like 6 print guys and then do big grouping and. But the idea is, like, I had to learn Sketch from Google Sketch.
Right.
And then SketchUp, sorry. Yeah, it was
yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But then I designed the stage. It was, like, 100 feet long. So they're doing all that and, like, getting the logistics is, like, this was easy because, like, it's, like, five. What I do is I do it to scale or to 10th scale, depending
mm-hmm.
on how big it is.
Right.
In Illustrator. And then I print it out, and I'll just hold it up and do it.
So you don't, like... mark it out on the wall or anything?
We did the lettering that way.
Okay.
But did it kind of old school. Like, it was a circle. I stuck a piece of tape and string and had a piece of chalk on the back. So.
Oh, my goodness. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, What would you say was the hardest struggle you had to overcome?
In general. I think getting started in like cold calling people and being assertive with, but being humble.
Right.
You know, it's like that combination of, you can be, trying to think what the word is, but you can just come across wrong sometimes.
Right.
So it's really hard for me sometimes to cold call people, but I cold called Von Glitchka in like 2004, and then we struck it up. We did a few projects together and have been friends ever since. So
that is crazy.
Yeah.
So you heard it here, people. Cold calling still works.
Well, that was 2004, so I'm not sure. With all the fake calls now, it's hard.
Right, but yeah, it is harder.
Yeah.
I think some kind of cold digital is probably more of than more acceptable now. Because no one, we're in the age where if you don't text me before you call me, like, you're interrupting me. We're kind of in that age, like, no
and
one
so
wants
me,
an
like,
unannounced phone call.
We have a landline at the studio.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, if I can't hear your voice intonation,
right,
you don't know what the text is saying.
Right.
But I have been texting, like, I do Procreate sketches and text sketches for clients to kind of expedite that first branding process.
So, okay, that's interesting. That's interesting.
I always ask him, are you up for texting it, or would that annoy you?
Right. So who are some of the people that kind of are in your support system, kind of helped you through like the rough patches and just kind of brought you support?
And I really didn't have a lot of support before before Creative South.
Wow.
And I think that's what I was yearning for when I read Lenny's blog. Mm. And he was talking about this mic guy that was so nice. And it was just cool just to get this group of people. It really, I'd been kind of burnt out a little bit. Just, I mean, making good money with web design and stuff, but it's like, I had kind of had a formula.
Right.
So it's like, when you stick to a formula, you're just kind of, it's rote,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like, it's not fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I do with art, is I go down and I put on headphones or music and just really get into it and release myself into it. So if I don't do that, then my work kind of
reflected it.
Yeah, it just kind of goes downhill a little bit.
Okay.
So like, it really boosts my creativity to be creative outside of design. So.
Okay, so you heard about Lenny talking about Mike and Creative South. So how did that create like a support for you?
The first year, you know, I was just like fire hose of like people and you know, I wanted to like hide in Mike's shadow and kind of walk behind him, which is easy for me to do. I think I just saw that people really cared.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they were asking you questions outside of like, what do you think of this grid system and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, how's your family?
Nice.
Do you have any kids? You know? Mm-hmm. How's your business doing? You know, more of like personal,
even though
it's like, you know, that's business, but it's personal because
right.
you're like, are you doing well? You know,
mm-hmm. It's really about how are you doing?
Yeah.
Right.
So that phrase, come as friends, leave as family, really was true.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's cool. That is cool. So your support started with Creative Self, like the true support.
I mean, my wife's been incredibly supportive throughout and has always kind of pushed me to be like, no, you are good. You just need to keep, you know, looking forward. And, you know, she's just really good encourager. So it's her gift. So
that's cool. That's
like,
cool.
Sometimes you can spiral a little bit and get down on yourself, but she always pushes and she's like, oh, I know you need to work a little bit. I'm going to do this. And, you know, it's like, it just really helps with the family. So family is really important. But the new studio we moved in about 5 years ago is like the top floor of a large house. So it's like, I work all day up there. And then when I come down, I put on my apron to cook, which I love to cook. I go into dad mode. So it's like a good transition for me.
Okay. All right. So,
let's jump into some fun questions. What is that thing that you can't live without that's not your phone?
Either a paintbrush or a pencil with a good eraser. Not a bad eraser.
Dude.
Like a white eraser that will not leave just tons of marks all over my paper, you know?
I don't think people understand how important a good eraser is.
Yeah.
Like, it's the worst thing when you are drawing and you feel like you're onto something and you use this eraser and it leaves more marks than actually
or
was
rips
there.
Paper. Yeah.
Dude, you just spoke my language just now. You just spoke my language. That is the truth. Okay, those... That makes sense. So let's hit me with some book recommendations.
That's an easy one for me. It probably wasn't at the start of my life, but as I've grown, and I'm celebrating my 20th year of anniversary with my wife this year, the Bible has been like, at first it was like, this is really boring. You know, it's like, it makes no sense. It's like stupid, really violent at the start, and then it's like kind of wishy-washy at the end, and then as I, it's interesting, it's like I read it for the first time all the way through, probably when, I'm not going to throw out dates, I'm just going to say how long ago, probably about 14 years ago, and then I read it a couple times after that, and then about once a year, and really in the last 4 or 5 years, I've started to notice just every time I read it, it's different, and they talk about it being alive, and I'm like, yeah, right, and it's like, it literally is alive, and so I do a group, Prayer for Designers, and we meet once a week, and when we meet, we have all these different people from different walks of life, different age groups, different places where they live. One guy's in New Jersey. They're just all over. But the whole thing about that book is, and probably a lot of books, but that one specifically, is that the perspective of each person and their walk to get there to what they're reading is so different than mine, but it doesn't mean it's unvalidated.
Right.
So it's just cool. I just think I'm actually reading Luke twice this month, and I'm doing it with two different groups, and each time we talk about 10 verses for like an hour, and it's completely different.
Every
so
time.
It's so cool. It's amazing.
Yes, I've been a part of a few, and it's been a blessing.
Yeah.
It's been a blessing. All right, so what is the first hour of Brian's day like?
Is this a work hour or like
whichever one you want to share, whichever you're most comfortable with sharing.
Well, I can tell you quickly, like the first hour is, you know, getting up. I make breakfast for everyone, do lunches, and usually my wife has some allergies, so she gets her own food, but like sometimes I'll do that too, but getting the kids off to school, they're at three different schools now, so I walk my son to school, which is great, so, it's like a quarter mile, so it's great for me to like start the day with a little walk, and I just love soaking in. I love being outside and walking. So.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I enjoy that too.
As far as work goes, usually it's email. Get that out of the way, and even though I use like I forget what it's called, like Nota or something. But I have like all my project lists and like what I need to do today, and then what's hot and like what's on the back burner. So you're kind of looking at the cards and seeing. And then I always have my card to the right, post to portfolio, and it's just sitting there because I haven't posted to portfolio. I got like 20 projects to post. It's just it's crazy.
That is cool.
But so going through emails, trying to figure out like. Kind of like design sprints for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually do a big design sprint in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
and doing a lot of conference calls in the morning when kids aren't home, like at 3, because we have all wood floors, so it like reverberates through the house. So
that is cool. And is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's great for cleaning, but bad for less, you know, how loud it is.
Right. That's cool. So what's next for Brian?
Oh, for me? I actually, you're throwing names out, but there's a company that's nationwide that does free business development courses, and they put you with a mentor.
Nice.
And so I met with my first business mentor, because Trilon turns 10 this year. We started in 2009.
Okay.
And so I'm excited to see what will happen, but basically they're coming up with a business plan with me to grow the business a little bit more, and I've kind of been hesitant about it, and I actually was waiting until the kids were a little bit older. So I think from my process, I was planning to build Trilion up to sell it eventually when I retire, unless one of my kids wants to take it over.
So interesting.
And then do
whatever you want
as Brian White Design later on. So.
Wow.
Yeah. But the diversification has really helped. So I actually duplicated the site last year and did Brian White Design, but changed everything from plural to singular.
Got it.
And then pulled anything that wasn't mine out.
Okay.
And then I've actually gotten 5 or 6 local clients that have been really fun to do, like branding, architectural photo shoot. So they're like, I just kind of send them a list of all the services we can do, but mostly it's just me doing those small projects. So those are kind of fun. They fill in those gaps that might be there if you're just doing big project to big project.
I heard this quote one time that a good business, well, not necessarily a good business, but it's always good to build a business that you can sell someday, even though you may never sell it.
Yeah. And I think I'd be fine with that too.
Right.
And it's like, that's not my drive at all, but it's like, you have to think ahead a little
bit.
So
It's true. So what advice would Brian have for any creative out there?
Are we talking to beginners or like everyone?
Your call. Who do you want to talk to? Or you could talk to both.
I think for people coming into the design community and graduating, I think patience is something that kind of slowing down and taking those deep breaths and not expecting it to happen right away, and just trust, you know, thinking about Bob Ewing and like other people that have done those year-long things to really push themselves.
Right.
And I started one, and I didn't, it wasn't for me, so I stopped it, you know? But it's like, I've done some 40-day projects that I really love, but I just, for people coming in, they can get discouraged really quickly because they are getting a fire hose of information.
Right.
And it's skewed a little bit. Like, Dribbble is not real. I mean, most of the stuff is not real on there.
Mm.
And it's like, I was like astounded that people were posting stuff that wasn't a project. Like, why would you do a fake project and post it to Dribbble to get likes? But that's what people do now, and that's okay, and it's interesting, and I've actually done it now.
Right.
I learned through the process, so that's what they were doing, is learning. But you just have to be careful about like what you're going for, because if you jump so far ahead, and if you have your design foundation. But you really need to learn how to do the business.
Yeah.
And like how to talk to people. I mean, I always start with a branding questionnaire or a web questionnaire, and you really get a sense of how they want to be perceived through those questions.
Right.
Do you want to stop for a second?
No.
So really thinking about the client and not like, hey, did I make enough money off of this, you know?
Right.
And because when you treat them the way you want to be treated, they're going to come back and use you.
Right.
And when you have repeat clients, your base grows.
Yeah, that's so golden.
As you get older and your business gets older, then your base gets bigger. So And that's when you bring in people who can do the work for you. So.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, sometimes one of the things, and you're one of the people that, and I know a couple of the people that exemplify this, right? So you're one of the people that exemplify this. Like, I know there's this idea to grow your following, right? Grow your following, grow your following, grow your following. But I know people on both spectrums. I know people that have a huge following, but are literally struggling financially.
Yes.
And I know people that don't have no, little to none, right? As per the, you know, the ideal to have, but business-wise, they're thriving, right? And you're one of those people that kind of exemplify that. Like, at the end of the day, like, if you're in business, you have to get some kind of financial return.
Yes.
Not likes, not follows.
Yes.
That is a good thing to get, but that's more of a long-term play.
Yeah.
It's not a necessarily right now business play.
If you make all your decisions that, you know, I'll need that money within 3 months, then you'll be out.
Right.
You really have to think ahead.
Right.
It's like, I think for me that helped my wife is really good about thinking about finances and making good decisions. So together we've always saved up with mm-hmm. cash and then
right.
bought the car instead of you know, leasing one. Just because you save like $500, but the idea of it is, you know, saving enough. And honestly, you know, starting with $9,000 was incredibly hard. I mean, it was crazy. And maybe that number is exaggerated. I bet it's like 12 or something. But I know we were eating ramen or whatever. But we had a financial planner that she was like, "You need a job." Like she told me, I needed
straight
a
up.
Job. And I was like, I can do this. And with the Lord's help, he put me in contact with Brad Abear, really, really neat Christian guy, businessman, and he had his own company in L.A. So I was doing a lot of branding and like print design for him.
Nice.
And he flew me out a few times to
nice.
L.A. And that really helped give me a foundation. And then, yeah, just thinking about some of the steps and just learning. Like, I learned WordPress when it came out,
mm-hmm.
learned how to build sites with that. And that's a really good foundation for, like, everyone needs a website, and you can put one up that's better than Squarespace pretty quick. And it pays good money, and, you know, it's like it's not my favorite work. But it gets better as you know, learn it more. But or you can push the limits with the devs that I use. But the idea is that's a good foundation for your business, and then you can do the cool side projects that you might get more likes for. But you're right. You can't pay the bills with likes.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth.
I mean, I'd always love to build my following,
mm-hmm.
but what I like about my following is that I know almost all the people on it, and that they actually they would talk to me about, like, a few people have come up and they're like, "Oh, I really like that side project you're
mm-hmm,
doing,"
mm-hmm.
and to me that's worth a lot more than having, like, whatever.
Right. I'm there with you, man. This has been so cool. Where can people go to find you, learn more about you?
I run Triline Studios, so that's the main studios, TRILION studios.com, and then BrianWhiteDesign.com, and then I run Prayer for Designers, so PrayerForDesigners.com too. So
nice.
That's been a big passion side project of mine lately.
Nice. Well, Brian, dude, I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope it's been super valuable to you and you're now ready to take your audience building, your community growing to the next level to help you and help me build our empire, for lack of a better word, or just to build our thing. Remember to stop by iTunes, Passion Behind the Art, and leave a review and subscribe. It's very important to me. It helps the podcast grow, and it makes me feel good to kind of hear from you guys, to know what you like about this podcast, what it's done for you. So jump on iTunes and subscribe and leave a review. Passion Behind the Art. be blessed.